From KCRW and KCRW.com, this is Left, Right, and Center.
You like potato?
And you like potato?
You like tomato?
And you like tomato?
Potato?
Potato?
Tomato?
Tomato?
Let's call them.
A white supremacist shot and killed 9 black churchgoers in Charleston, South Carolina. The Pope warned against the dangers of climate change, and 2016 candidates made some pretty outlandish promises. No, not just Donald Trump. Welcome to Left, Right, and Center, your civilized yet provocative antidote to the self-contained opinion bubbles that dominate political debate. I'm Josh Barrow, correspondent for The Upshot at the New York Times. On the left is Robert Scheer, editor-in-chief at TruthDig.com. On the right, Rich Lowry, editor of National Review, and our special guest is Liz Winstead, co-creator of The Daily Show, comedian, and author. Welcome to all of you. So Dylan Ruth has been charged with 9 counts of murder in the mass shooting at a black church in Charleston on Wednesday. According to CNN, 2 law enforcement officials say Mr. Ruth, who is white, confessed to the shooting and said he wanted to start a race war. A surviving witness said Mr. Ruth told the parishioners, quote, "I have to do it. You rape our women, and you're taking over our country. You have to go." Bob, this is an unspeakable tragedy and one people have been having trouble figuring out how to discuss. Should we think of this as an act of terrorism?
Well, I think the word terrorism has been used for political purpose, and so it's come to mean Muslims of a certain kind or what have you. It's always been a terrible concept of what you're, if you're talking about using violence to target innocent civilians to make a political point, this is clearly an act of terrorism, by what we know of his own admission. And we should stop distinguishing that, you know, you have to be from a certain part of the world to engage in. The Oklahoma bombing was an act of terrorism. It was an attempt to make a political point using innocent people who are not combatants in a war that you've declared. And so, yes, and I think it's a recognition, you know, it's going to be, we're going to take that trip and say, oh, you know, his personal problems. Yes, obviously, anybody who engages in this kind of activity has a screw loose. I would stipulate that, but that doesn't make it of less social significance. The fact is we have an enormous race problem in this country, and there are too many people who identify, you know, black people as the source of grievances in their life. And in South Carolina, I think you have a particular problem where you have the Confederate flag, which for black people and for many of us embodies racism and slavery. You have highways named after leading Confederate generals, and you have not really come to grips with the legacy of slavery and segregation.
Rich, what do you make of this? Because, I mean, a lot of hate crimes don't have a political agenda, and we call them hate crimes for that reason. They're just out of hate. But this, it seems, at least from what we've seen so far, it seems like the shooter actually had a very strange political agenda here.
Yes, if you take him on his terms, it was an act of political terrorism, an act of violence carried out to achieve a political goal, which in his deranged mind was a race war. Now, a lot of these killings, you know, social meaning has been imputed to them when the perpetrators have just been frankly deranged. And he does not seem to have been as out of his mind and severely mentally ill as some of these other shooters. But there's no question that he was disturbed. I still would hesitate to draw larger lessons about this. The idea that the flying the Confederate flag, which I have very little use for, I'm a Yankee through and through, flying it at a war memorial is going to incite young men to go murder black people in their churches is completely wrong and a sort of fantasy. So I would just counsel a little modesty here. And I think the broader cultural trend is that mass shootings have become an ingrained part of our culture, at least since Columbine. And sadly, there is just no ready public policy fix to this phenomenon. So it just seems every month we have some heartbreak, and this one was just unspeakably vile, that anyone could sit and pray with good people for an hour and then stand up and shoot them is just mind-boggling and evil.
Liz, I see you're looking at the article from the New Yorker that David Remnick wrote this week, saying that, you know, we do have a word for this act, that it's a lynching, and that it's, you know, while it's novel now, and you have to look back a fair amount of time to see a single act with a similar death toll. This is an act with actually a very long tradition in the South.
Yeah, 3,400 lynchings of black men and women throughout, from, I believe it's 1882 to Martin Luther King's assassination. And I think it's misguided to act as though people are saying the Confederate flag, this one time hanging, affected this one person. I think that the presence of a Confederate flag hanging over a state capitol in a state that has, since the Civil War, had names of people who were white supremacists on their streets that these people drive on is more to the point. It is a larger systemic problem within the state than it is just trying to say, this flag, this one person, this one time. And I think that it's horrifying every step of the way. And it's horrifying to think that he gave clear signs to his roommates and nothing was done, that his parents gave him a gun and nothing was done. I mean, the systematic way that this person was able to execute their volatile racist hatred is shocking from everyone that surrounded him as well.
So this issue ended up being an issue in the campaign this week, and presidential candidates were commenting on it. And a lot of them have sort of, you know, taken two tacks on it. Some have said, you know, well, this is, you know, this was motivated by racism. Senator Lindsey Graham today said, you know, these people were killed because they were black. And then various candidates have also said things. Jeb Bush said, you know, I don't know what was on the mind or in the heart of the man who committed these atrocious crimes. I'm sort of two minds about this, because obviously in this instance, that's being kind of obtuse. Like, it's fairly clear what happened here. But on the other hand, I feel like the general impulse is to react very quickly to crime stories. And in general, you do want to let the process play out. Something you don't say today, you can always say tomorrow. So I don't know, Rich, what do you make of that? Should candidates have been faster to come out and describe in frank terms exactly what this was?
Well, I'd be curious when Jeb said that, because, you know, in the immediate aftermath, maybe that's appropriate. But now,
it was on Friday.
As you suggest, yeah, well, now we have a much clearer picture. But I agree with you that the general impulse upon these kind of events is for each side to retreat to their non sequiturs. And my favorite one, which I actually happen to think is more relevant than most of them, is that we need to do a better job treating the severely mentally ill. But that doesn't really seem to apply in this case, at least not yet. We'll see if we learn more. But gun control, which is a favorite non sequitur, would have done nothing to stop this, because no one's talking about banning handguns. This wasn't an assault rifle. He went through a background check because he hadn't been convicted of a crime or otherwise adjudicated. It had nothing to do with magazine size. He reloaded several times. So it's a natural human impulse to want to pretend that there's some easy fix or solution to this. Unfortunately, I don't think there is.
I don't know, Bob, what do you make of that? Because it seems like there are gun policies in other countries that would prevent this sort of crime, but those are much more severe gun policies than are ever on the table in the U.S. Other countries do ban handguns, but is there any point to the gun control debate we have, given how it's around the margins and wouldn't affect crimes like this one?
Well, I mean, I think it's always good to have a debate, and I personally would like to see getting rid of guns, but I agree with Rich that is not the critical issue here. Where I disagree with him is the historic role of racism in America, which we have not dealt with. And it is not a trivial thing that people in large parts of the Deep South want to celebrate the whole Confederate experience. And in South Carolina, particularly, where you have it on license plates, you have it over the Capitol, you have flying around. It was not lowered to half mast today, as the American flag was within full view of the Capitol. So I think this legacy of racism, you know, it's like I believe in total free speech, and people want to have stupid views, let them express it. And I believe that about the Holocaust or anything. But I understand why Jewish people, you know, feel incredibly offensive that one would minimize or deny the Holocaust or deny the killing of so many Jews. Well, I have the same view about slavery. My goodness, this country was founded with a good chunk of the country accepting the total bondage, destruction destruction of African people and other slaves. And so to deny that history, to not to come to grips with it, particularly in a place like Charleston, which has tried to put a beautiful image on it, and somehow we're all past that. No, we're not past that. And this is a reminder that we have to confront the horrible legacy of the destruction of a whole people from which we have not fully recovered.
Just a quick factual thing. If I'm not mistaken, this flag is not flying over the Capitol. It's on the grounds of the Capitol at a Confederate memorial. But if you Google the South Carolina state flag, it's not a Confederate symbol.
No, I know. I just did that. But they did not lower the... I Googled the very thing you're asking me to do. They did not lower the Confederate flag. They did lower the American flag.
Right, but it's not... I think it's been referred to as flying over the Capitol. Which
no,
does.
But it's
right,
been
it's
officially...
Flying, it's flying on the grounds of the Capitol.
And it's been officially condoned. And look, let me just make a bipartisan point here. Ever since Nixon developed the Southern Strategy, the Republicans have competed with the Democrats for the affection of the Deep South. And the price of competing for the affection of the Deep South has been indulging racism. That is really the issue, and denying the legacy of slavery and segregation. And both parties have been complicit, but the most recent manifestation is the Republican Party, which betrayed the tradition of Eisenhower and other moderate Republicans and has played footsie with racism, and at some time it stopped.
I know Liz wanted to get in here.
For me, the biggest thing is we have to talk about race. We can't couch it in other things. At this point, I feel like, it's even depressing to... John Stewart made very salient points on his show last night, but it's points that black scholars and black folks have been making forever. And it's time that we start elevating the voices and listening to the voices of people who have been living this experience and living in this white supremacist situation for a really long time.
And I kind of think that's why there was this push for the candidates to talk faster this week. It's that, candidates who were saying, well, let's wait and see, I think may have been acting out of a healthy pause that is for any crime, but that there are people, black people especially, basically saying, look, there are huge residual problems in the United States related to race that are often ignored, and it felt like it was being ignored again. And I think, the hopefully over the next few days, and we're already starting to see it from some of the candidates, we're starting to see that shift toward acknowledging what happened there.
Senators from South Carolina is black. So the idea that 21st century South Carolina is a bastion of white supremacy is really outlandish. And it's about 60-70 years out of date.
Life is complicated. You can have, progress that is simultaneous.
And we're also not talking just about South Carolina. We're talking about a systemic problem of race in the United States of America. Not just South Carolina.
But it's really, it disgraces the memory of civil rights pioneers who are really fighting institutionalized racism in the Jim Crow South to compare the current South to what it was 50 or 60 years ago, or even longer ago, when you'd have lynchings that were communal events and that you couldn't get a jury to convict killers of blacks. No one is supporting what this guy did. He's very likely to get the death penalty.
There's clearly been some progress, but let's not deny there are people in the South now and not only in the South, who want to reverse the gains of the Voting Rights Act and make it more difficult for black people to vote. So that is a reality right at this moment. Yes, not just the South. Agreed. And by the way, the incarceration of black people in this country, which is an international scandal, primarily affects black people, and it's an outrage that we hardly ever discuss.
Unfortunately, I need to move us along, but let us know what you think about the shooting in Charleston at kcrw.com/LRC. Up ahead, Donald Trump gets in the presidential race, and the Pope raises an alarm about climate change. You're listening to Left, Right, and Center.
Listen to Left, Right, and Center on demand from KCRW's smartphone apps, now for the iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. And share your thoughts on today's show at kcrw.com/LRC.
Listen to KCRW's 24-hour all-news channel. Stream BBC World Service, NPR, and KCRW programs. Continuous coverage and accessible via our smartphone app or online at kcrw.com.
Back again with Left, Right, and Center. I'm Josh Barrow of the New York Times. On the left is Robert Scheer, author of the new book, They Know Everything About You. Rich Lowry, editor of National Review, is on the right. And Liz Winstead, co-creator of The Daily Show, is also with us. So it was a busy week in the presidential campaign, and unfortunately, I need to start with Donald Trump, who appears to be a candidate for the Republican nomination. His announcement speech was an incoherent hour-long ramble, including this delightful observation about Mexicans.
When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're not sending you. They're not sending you. They're sending people that have lots of problems, and they're bringing those problems with us. They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists, and some, I assume, are good people.
Liz, you're the comedian, so I'm going to start with you. Is this performance art?
Sometimes I feel like Donald Trump has just replaced bed bugs as America's number one pest. I mean, it is just I feel as though the circus is in full swing. But what I find really upsetting is, you know, let's not forget that, talking of race baiting, Donald Trump was beating the Obama birth certificate drum so profoundly and fueling flames that were so insane back then. And now to add this and to look at in sort of the umbrella of what's going on in Charleston in our race relations, I'm not sure Donald Trump's going to be awesome as president.
The thing, though, is that, like, Donald Trump says these offensive things, but it's so hard to take him seriously, even to the point of getting offended by them.
Well, but for me, sometimes, though, it sucks the airtime of people that you actually do want to hear from if we spend so much time on Donald Trump, because let's face it, it is hilarious. It also does stop you from saying, oh, Jeb Bush is supposed to be the moderate, but for progressives like me, when you look at the litany of how he governed, he is anything but. So, you know.
So with that in mind, we will move on from Trump shortly, but I want to ask Rich one what I think is a fairly substantive question about Trump, which is that he laid out this set of issue positions in this speech, in this hour, that combined fears about immigration that you usually hear from the right and fears about trade that you usually hear from the left, basically saying we should have a big tariff on Mexican cars and America first and, you know, build up our domestic industries and all this stuff. It's actually kind of like the agenda that you hear from nationalist political parties in Europe that are doing quite well right now. I mean, Marine Le Pen is running for president of France on basically this platform and is probably going to get 30% of the vote. So is there a market for this stuff, and should we be concerned that Trump in his clownish way is actually going to end up driving part of the political agenda in this primary?
I very much doubt it. Now, it's really a Perot-ist type agenda, which can, you know, get some traction when disaffection with our political institutions is really severe. And look, it is pretty severe now, but Trump is just so clownish. He's so crude. He's so vulgar that he repels pretty much everyone. You look at the polls and he has the most single highest negative rating among Republican voters. So this is going nowhere. And forgive my cynicism if I just float the idea that this run might have something to do with the terms of the renewal of the contract of his TV show. I know that might be crazy, but I'm just going to put
Rich,
it out there.
Rich, that is poppycock. No, but I also think, too, mind you, for those candidates that we've all seen on either side who get into a race that we all know they're trying to up their book deal, trying to up their speaking stuff, no one books Trump for any of those things. So he has to have a self-imposed media flurry, because no one really wants to talk to him a whole bunch. He inserts himself everywhere. No one's offering him a thing to be on every week. He doesn't have he had the Celebrity Apprentice with which he could bully people, but as far as a serious person with ideas, no one's ever booking him, really.
Donald Trump has all the ideas. Why does he need to be around serious people with ideas?
Well, then why doesn't he buy a country?
As he told us, he will be the greatest jobs president God has ever created. But so, Bob, I want to let you talk about Trump or not, as you prefer. But it seems like the speech was playing on certain economic fears. We also had Jeb Bush this week announcing that he intends to grow the economy at 4% a year as president. How do you see these messages on the economy playing out in the campaign?
Well, I do think the prospect of an American fascism is always there. We had it in earlier periods in our history where people played the nativist card and condemned the foreigner. And Trump is solidly in that tradition. So yes, you can think of him as a joke, but if you want to use that European model that you referred to, Le Pen and others, that's fascism. And it's typical of fascism that it comes from an extremely wealthy person who then wants to blame the poor and the dispossessed and, you know, Mexican immigrants who gather our food and raise our children as being the source of our ills. That's a familiar fascist a message to pick on the vulnerable, as was done with Jews, gypsies, homosexuals, and everyone else. So I wouldn't make light of it. My only question is, why is, I don't want to censor Trump, but why is he admitted into polite circles? Why would anybody even consider, you know, having him in the room? Why is he not intrinsically offensive? What he said about Mexican people, if he said that about Jewish or black people or anyone else, we've had, or homosexual people at this point, we would all shun him. Why is he not being shunned for saying these just, you know, really unbelievable, awful things about Mexican people who have made such an incredible contribution, Mexican immigrants, to our country?
Well, I think one thing we did find out this week is that the room you speak of was bought and paid for at $50 a person. He actually paid actors to attend his rally. So I think that might be your answer.
There was also a piece about how Donald Trump has an awful lot of Facebook followers in East Asia, which tend to be fake accounts that you buy followers from so that it looks like you have an enormous Facebook following.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah. So, Rich, I want to get you in quickly on this Jeb Bush thing, Jeb Bush's announcement saying he'll grow the economy at 4%. That would be the fastest pace since any administration since the Kennedy-Johnson era. What do you make of that promise? Can you deliver on that?
Well, he wants to be ambitious and aspirational and optimistic, but if you drill down on it, it's very unlikely to happen because there's basically a formula involved here. And unless you have, you know, massive productivity gains, and how you boost productivity growth, a little bit of a mystery, or massive increases in the labor market, and I do think there's some things we can do to boost labor force participation, but you'd really have to import, you know, massive numbers of people, and I'm sure Donald Trump at least wouldn't approve of that, but that's not really going to happen politically. So we can, if Jeb Bush is elected president, even if he's doing a bang-up job and the economy is thriving, you can pretty much cut the ads for the 2018 midterm elections saying that he has failed to deliver on this promise.
I want to get to one last topic. The presidential candidates weren't content to just fight with each other this week. They also got into it a little bit with the Pope. The Pope released an encyclical, a letter to Catholics all over the world, warning of the dangers of climate change and calling for action against it. This didn't impress a couple of Catholic Republicans in the race. Jeb Bush said, quote, "I don't get my economic policy from my bishops or my cardinal or my Pope." Rick Santorum said, "I think we're probably better off leaving science to the scientists." Rich, I know you wrote about the encyclical. What did you think of this document?
I think it's really weak. Now, there are things I appreciate about it and that I think are beautiful and true. As a Christian, I do think all creatures in the world reflect the glory of God, and we should treat them with as much respect as we can. But it's really a fundamentally anti-modern an anti-development document, and it's just you cannot, on the one hand, profess concern for the material well-being of the poor. At the same time, you implicitly reject the Industrial Revolution and global capitalism. You know, you look at world economic history in 1800. Prior to the serious onset of the Industrial Revolution, the welfare of mankind was basically the same as it was in the Stone Age. And everything was great as long as you didn't mind a life expectancy average, you know, of 30 or 35, and all sorts of disease and illiteracy and all the rest of it. And on global warming in particular, it just, for me, it lazily adopts kind of the fashionable rhetoric of the time. It doesn't engage in any serious cost-benefit analysis. It doesn't really deal with any of the complexities, because the doomsday scenarios are really, if you dig into the serious science as opposed to the political discussions around it, you know, they're 80 or 100 years off and based on hugely complex models that I don't think we should have that much confidence on, and certainly not enough to do anything to hamper our current growth, or especially to hamper the development of third world countries, who, if they're going to lift their people out of poverty, need markets, need trade, need capitalism, need development, industry, and cheap energy.
Bob, I gather you were more impressed with the document?
Oh, I think it's one of the great documents of modern history, and certainly right up there with Pope John's the 23rd's Pacem in Terris, warning about the dangers of nuclear war, which actually may have saved us from nuclear war. It came at an absolutely critical moment in 1963. There have been other historic statements. I don't know if they're divinely inspired or not, but it's brilliant. I read a very different document than Rich just referred to. It was not an attack on the modern economy. On the contrary, it says the modern economy is going to self-destruct unless we put in cautions, unless we have rules of the road. And those rules of the road have to benefit people throughout the world. And this example of the third world, I mean, here you have China, a third world country. Yes, they've developed enormously, but they can't breathe. And they know it. And they know they have to get rid of coal as the engine of their growth. And they know they have to deal with global warming. India is holding back precisely because they feel cap and trade and all these things are benefiting the rich and not concerned with the poor. And what the Pope is saying, which I think is a brilliant exposition of the total pro-life position. We've heard all stuff about, you know, pro-life, anti-life. But what he has affirmed is, okay, you know, you can disagree, and he does profoundly on the question of abortion, but he is asserting a position that we haven't heard much from. If you really care about the born, then you have to care about their well-being. You have to care about what happens to the fetus once it's out there. And can they breathe? Can they have opportunity? And this is an assertion beyond global warming for global equality. Global equality, it's an incredibly powerful ethical statement that we ignore at our peril.
I want to get Liz in here quickly, since she's the only Catholic around the table.
I think the most important thing that I think about this is that the Pope has asked people of faith to really research, look into the effects of climate change. He has put it on the agenda. You know, the fact of the matter is there's 7.2 billion people on Earth. 1 billion of us use 55% of all of the fuels, and a lot of the others don't even have access to it, and we have to curb the way we live. And I love this Pope, but he's also, you know, these politicians, they say, it's so convenient to say, leave it to the scientists. I don't consult my bishop. Well, then you know what? I would really like that to transfer into all of your things, especially reproductive health. I just had to say that.
We've reached that time once again for our famed left, right, and center rants featuring pet peeves from across the political spectrum. Rich Lowry, what's your rant?
In New Jersey, a woman who felt threatened by her ex-boyfriend tried to buy a gun, but the process takes so long that she was still waiting when her ex-boyfriend stabbed her to death in her driveway. Her safety was the collateral damage of idiotic gun control laws.
Bob Shearer, your soapbox.
Yes, at 3 o'clock this morning, people started lining up in Oakland, California to celebrate the 40-year late victory of the Warriors, who unfortunately are threatening to move from Oakland, as are the A's and as are the Raiders. Oakland has been a great sports town. Oakland is a great city. It deserves its moment in the sun, and those sports teams should stay in Oakland and stop deserting one of the great fan bases that we have.
Liz Winstead, what's on your mind?
I just want to finish up with the Pope. When I look at this Pope, he's sort of like a guy who was in a crappy band and then has had a good solo career, but then sometimes he plays those old hits, and you're like, oh, dude.
Nice. For my rant, very quickly, I'm just really annoyed that Treasury is taking Alexander Hamilton off the $10 bill instead of taking Andrew Jackson off the $20, because Andrew Jackson was a really horrible guy. That's all we have time for today. I want to thank Bob Shearer, Rich Lowry, and Liz Winstead. Laura Dine-Million produced today's program. Our technical director is JC Swadek. Sarah Singer Schiff is our production assistant. I'm Josh Barrow. Thanks for joining us, and tune in next week for more Left, Right, and Center.
I'll wear pajamas.
You got pajamas.
For we know we need each other, so we better call the calling of all. Let's call the
Download the podcast from KCRW.com or from iTunes, and share your comments at KCRW.com/LRC. Left, Right, and Center is produced and distributed by KCRW.